Welcome to a Sober Girls Guide podcast, a lifestyle podcast based on sobriety and recovery. I'm your host and sober girl, Jessica Jabot. Inspired by my own sobriety and wellness journey, I want to spread the wealth of knowledge. Tune in each week for uncensored conversations about mental health, self-development, wellness and spirituality, and how they influence each guest's unique recovery journey. My goal is to educate and inspire and to let you know you are not alone on your recovery journey. Thanks so much for tuning in to a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Let's go! Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 197 of a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Are you curious about the many ways sobriety can transform your life? Well, Sarah Levy's new book, Drinking Games, will spell them all out for you. Sarah and I catch up on how her life has excelled since her last visit on the podcast. We talk all things about relationships, marriage, and how to plan and execute a wedding booze-free. This is such a fantastic episode. Let's get into it. Sarah, I am so excited to talk to you again. Obviously, you've been on the podcast before, and we were just talking about this, but so much life stuff has happened.
So much life stuff. I cannot believe it. And thank you so much for having me back on. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Yes. I mean, I definitely want to get into the book and like drinking games and talking all about that, because it's huge. Like, it, you can't open TikTok, Instagram, like our group, our Sober Girls book club without hearing or seeing your book. It is such a success, and I really want to get into that. But first of all, I want to talk about some life stuff. You know, for everyone who hasn't caught the our first episode together, can you kind of give us a little kind of Coles notes to your journey and your relationship with alcohol?
Sure. And thank you so much for saying that about Drinking Games. That's really nice to hear. Okay. So for anyone who hasn't heard our first episode, my name's Sarah. I got sober a little over 5 years ago when I was 28. And at the time I was living in New York City, I was working for a startup. And on the outside, you know, my life looked pretty good. It looked normal. I had friends, I was dating, I was working out, but my relationship with alcohol had really started to change. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I say this often when I talk about my relationship with drinking, because it just sums it up so perfectly. But I remember hearing someone say when I first got sober that drinking for them had started out as fun and then become fun with problems. And then it was just problems. And that was very much my experience. Drinking was really fun for me in the beginning. And then, you know, I started experiencing a lot of blackouts whenever I would get drunk and really thought that like that was normal. I didn't know that that's not how everyone drank. I thought that everyone just got really, really drunk, didn't stop drinking at, you know, any point in the night, and then woke up the next morning with a huge like missing chunk of their memories. Like, I thought that's what everyone did.
Like oopsie daisy. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Turns out that not everyone experiences blackouts. And they definitely became more and more frequent for me, and also just like got scarier. And I just, you know, really fought so hard to continue drinking. Like, all I wanted to do was figure out how to drink in my 20s. Getting sober really just was like the last resort for me. It seemed really extreme. You know, it was like, that just seems like, to abstain completely, like there's got to be like a balanced medium, you know? And so I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to drink normally. What I've learned is like, if you have to try to figure out how to drink normally, you've probably like entered into some problematic territory with your drinking. But, you know, I didn't know anyone who was sober. I didn't have any friends who didn't drink. And, you know, the like sober curious space that we now know on social media, podcasts like this one, it didn't really exist. I couldn't find anything like it. There was nothing that was really like normalizing the idea of sobriety. And so I just felt really alone. And, you know, what happened was just that I kind of got sick and tired of being sick and tired, and had a really bad night. You know, few days after my 28th birthday, that was just not even my worst night drinking. It just was bad enough that I kind of realized that I was just done. You know, there were so many excuses that I had been telling myself and, you know, just like lies, honestly. Like I was lying to myself about my relationship with alcohol, telling myself that, you know, it's okay that you black out when you drink. It's fine that you're hungover for 4 days after drinking and that you're so anxious and everybody does this. You're young. And I just remember waking up that morning and being like, I don't even care if everybody does this. Like I can't do it anymore. Like I am just done. And I was just desperate. I was just desperate enough to make a change because I just didn't want to continue feeling the way that I felt. And I stopped drinking. And that was like my day one.
Whoa. And that's been it. Like no sip ups, no.
You know, I think of my slip ups as all the times between the ages of like 23 to 28 when I tried to control my drinking and couldn't, because in those like 5+ years, I would try to like take a week off of drinking, or I even remember once going a month without drinking and then being like, okay, I think I can, you know, I feel a lot better. I think I can resume my drinking. And it was always like, I picked up right where I left off and immediately like blacking out, feeling horrible. And so this time around, thankfully I haven't had a drink in over 5 years, a drink or a drug in over 5 years. But that's because I think I did a lot of fact finding in my 20s that, you know, when I, this time around, decided to get sober, I just knew that drinking didn't work for me. And I'm very grateful for that because I don't know that I would have stuck with sobriety had I not been so sure of the fact that like when I start to drink, I process alcohol differently than my peers. I don't know what's going to happen. And like I have had a lot of evidence, you know, to demonstrate that. Because sobriety has not always been easy, you know, it's still life, right? You're still a person. You still are experiencing all the emotions. For me, like I was still experiencing and still do experience all the emotions that I drank over. So feeling like insecure in moments, like not, you know, just
and more
fear what the future will hold.
Like more intensely. More intensely, because you're actually present. You're not like numbed out or dulled by like a substance to kind of like alleviate some of that pain.
And like that's real. Those feelings are real. They're uncomfortable. Being a human continues to be like a challenging experience at times. But the one thing I know for sure, because of the years that I spent trying to control my drinking and like failing, is that alcohol doesn't change it. It only makes it worse. It only makes my life more chaotic. So to answer your question, I have not thankfully had a slip or drank since that morning. But that's not to say that like, oh, I stopped drinking and my life became perfect and magically got so much easier. I just knew that I was done with the drugs and alcohol portion of my story.
And it's, I love how you say like, you know, we kind of almost have to build a case about like, cause we forget, right? It's like, it's really easy to forget like how, and get sucked into that like alluring nature of what like the facade of alcohol is, right? Like, oh, it's going to fix this. And you're just going to feel so much better and lighter.
And I was just talking to someone about this the other day. Like when I got sober, like it was around 2017. So the years prior to that, like living in New York City, I felt like I was being bombarded by all this imagery constantly, even like, even prior to those years, like growing up, seeing shows like Sex and the City, or like, just like this image of New York City and drinking and being like really chic and cool. And I just had this idea in my head of like being able to go out and order a glass of wine or order a martini, and thought that that just would make me this sophisticated version of myself, you know?
And like an adult, like it feels like you've like made it almost. Like
exactly.
You're not a child anymore. Like you get to make your own decisions. You have your own money. You get to buy whatever you want. It's like, it feels like, okay, I've arrived. I'm an adult now.
Totally. And I was very,
however,
you know, Yeah. Like I was very lost in a lot of ways in my, you know, early 20s. I didn't know what I wanted to do professionally. I felt very aimless. I just ended a relationship. I'd had a bad breakup at the end of college. And, you know, I had a lot to figure out. And so I was not like this emotionally, like, stable, super grounded adult, but I would pretend that I was one basically when I would go into a bar or a restaurant and order myself a drink.
Sure. And just like to anyone listening, like no one really has it all figured out. We're not all like, we're not all together at all. Like that's also not life. And that's not realistic. No, like regardless of your age or like,
oh yeah. Just,
there's always something new. And that's, I think that's, if you can kind of flip the script and embrace that, because there's always going to be change. There just is. Mm-hmm. It's constant, right? Yeah. And I think instead of like me personally, I always used to be like fear change, try to control it and like alcohol and control everything and anything that was in my world. Mm-hmm. And so like that became a really shitty, dark place. Like that's not a fun way to live. But if you can like embrace that, like, okay, change is going to happen. Like this is the wild ride, right? Like this is the adventure. And like, how are we going to navigate this? And I'm going to tell you right now, being drunk and hungover makes it a hell of a lot harder and much less enjoyable of a ride. You know, when you're trying to do life, it just doesn't work. It's like putting a band-aid over a bullet wound. It's like, okay,
exactly,
ridiculous.
Yeah. And it's just like, for me, like the drinking and the hangovers, they were just a distraction. Like,
yeah,
it was a temporary, like, other disaster to pay attention to, because when I was hungover, it was like, oh God, like me physically feeling so sick, needing to just like care for myself, not being able to really get out of bed, like ordering food, Gatorade, like sitting in bed watching Netflix. It's like, that's all I can focus on for those 48 hours at a time, repeating that every single weekend. Like I was not able to pick my head up and look around and think about like my goals or even form goals. Like, you know, I was just, my world was very small, even though I thought that it was this big, exciting New York life. And I had this job and I had these friends. Like I did have those things and I was able to kind of like function and hold it together. But inside I felt very just preoccupied with like constantly preoccupied with the chaos that I was creating when I started to drink.
Yeah. Did you ever use your hangovers as like an excuse just to like phone it in, like phone in the day and just be like, yeah, well, I got to take care of myself. I'm sick.
Oh my God. All the time. And
yeah.
I felt a lot of guilt about it because like my drunk self would like make all these plans, or even like my sober self during the week would make plans. Like I genuinely wanted to go to my friend's birthday brunch. I genuinely wanted to go to the workout that I paid for, you know, to go to that class. I wanted to like go for a walk or catch up on work or just like catch up on sleep. And then when I was hungover, I couldn't do any of those things. You know, the sleep I was getting was not restful and like I was missing plans. And I would always just have to be like, I don't feel well, you know? And it's like, I got so sick of being that person that was like, I can't show up. Or if I did like scrape myself together and drag myself out of bed, I was arriving late. And then it's all about me and like going to the bathroom because I'm going to throw up in the middle of whatever we're doing. Like I was really not in good shape, you know, towards the end of my drinking, especially like my hangovers just got so bad. And it was just at a certain point, like, what's the point of even showing up? I'm not showing up. I'm not present at all.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. I mean, I used to like use hangovers as an excuse, like not to connect with people. When literally that's all I wanted and needed. Like I was so self-absorbed and be like, oh my God, I'm so hungover. Like, oh, my life is so glamorous. I had such a crazy night last night. Ew. Like that's so boring.
It's like, so boring. So and like,
boring. Like good for true. You,
all,
honey.
Like, yeah. All I wanted was connection. Like all I was craving was connection to your point and would feel like I was getting it in these like drunken moments in the bathroom, connecting with random girls, being like, you look so pretty, right? Or like meeting a guy and being like, wow, we really like each other. But
totally
real. Like it couldn't be real, like because I was wasted. And then the next day when I like had opportunities to have genuine connections with like friends or family members who were awake and doing things because it was the middle of the day, I was in my apartment alone, like unable to show up for any of it. So it is this weird cycle where I would drink because I wanted to find connections. I would get this like false sense of connection when I was out. And then the next day I would feel like more isolated than ever.
Oh, yes. It's also like superficial. It's, like you said, it's not real. It's just, it's not. I want to talk about stuff that's real.
Yeah.
You've been doing some real living.
Life got real. Yeah.
Definitely. Okay. So I think when you were here last, you weren't even engaged.
I think that's right. I think I had just moved to LA from New York with my boyfriend.
Yeah.
Who's now my husband.
Yes.
And yes, we got engaged and then got married a little over a year ago. And that has been, you know, like an amazing, beautiful experience to go through sober, and one that I was really terrified of before I stopped drinking. I had this idea in my head of my wedding day, even just like, of course, dating. And then like fast forward to the wedding. And I remember telling a friend early when I first stopped drinking, like, I don't think I can really do this because like, what am I going to do at my wedding? How will I not drink? Yeah. She was like, you're not engaged. Like there's no wedding happening, you know? And I didn't even have a boyfriend. Let's
check yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Like check the facts. But I always, you know, would think like, oh, like I'm not going to have champagne at my wedding. Like that's so sad. And I was just talking about this recently with another sober friend who also got married recently. And I was just saying, like, I loved being sober on my wedding day. It was, I cannot imagine what that day would have been like for me had I been drinking.
Yeah.
I know for sure that I would have gotten too drunk. I would have probably tried really hard to not drink too much the night before and then been like really proud of myself for that. And, made it through the day, you know, probably wouldn't have eaten much with all the like nerves and adrenaline. And then by the time the ceremony was over, I would have gotten to the reception and been like, okay, now we can party. And I definitely would have blacked out. And I definitely would have woken up the next morning just with so much regret and shame, not to mention like, oh, who wants to wake up with a horrible hangover the morning after their wedding? Like, we went on our honeymoon shortly thereafter. Like there was a lot of stuff to do. I had to pack. I wanted to like show up for the brunch the next day and thank my guests for coming and like just be a present like human and wife, you know, and show up with like grace. And that would not have been possible had I been drinking. Also like the day went by really fast and it was like a beautiful, like super special day, obviously. And it went by really fast. But like, I did feel present for every part of it. And I feel like had I been drinking, it would have really just like gone by in the blink of an eye. And I feel like I was able to just like be a part of it because I wasn't drinking. So big plug and for sober weddings.
Right. And like savor these like moments and like savor that nervousness, like savor that those, you know, of course there's a little anxiety. It's a huge day. It's a huge commitment, right? And it's, you're supposed to feel these things. It's okay. It's totally okay.
I think that that's such a good point. Like there are so many emotions on your wedding day, your wedding week, you know, there's like last minute things that go wrong and like all the planning and the details. And then just like wanting to, everyone tells you, like the advice everyone gives you is, it goes by really fast. So like, make sure to take time with your partner and just the two of you and soak it up, you know, and you want to do that. You want to be able to be like, okay, this is happening. This is my wedding. Like everyone I love is in the same place. And I think for me at least, that would have been really hard to do if I had been mm-hmm. drinking because of the way that I drank.
Yeah, definitely. Tell me about the bar situation at your wedding, because I know this is like a huge, this is a huge like decision for a bride who is sober or who is like, you know, changing their relationship with alcohol. What did you personally opt for on your wedding day?
Yeah, so we had an open bar, full bar okay. for all of our guests, and yep. there were sober guests there and there were non-sober guests there. We wanted everyone to have a good time and celebrate yep. how they wanted to celebrate. And so we just had options. We had a full bar with lots of alcoholic options. And then we also had a lot of non-alcoholic options. I had a, my husband and I both had our own like signature cocktail and mocktail. Nice. And then we had champagne for the toasts and sparkling cider.
Yep.
And it was great. Everyone personally, like I did not pay attention to what anyone else was drinking. Okay. But I think, you know, everyone has to make that decision for themselves. I know sober individuals who have had like totally dry weddings, didn't want alcohol to be a part of the day at all. Yeah. For us, we just wanted our guests to, our wedding was in California. A lot of people traveled. We wanted everyone to feel comfortable. We wanted everyone to have fun. And we wanted right. our guests to just like have options for the night. Right. So we offered both.
Nice. And yeah. was there any, like, how did you guys come to that agreement? Did you make that on like together, or were you more a part of that decision making? Like, what did that look like?
We talked about it together. I mean,
yeah,
candidly, it really, like, it's just expensive to have alcohol and food and all of that stuff at your wedding. So like, yeah. we definitely just like looked at the cost, and that was really the only discussion was like, okay, this is now like a part of the budget. And sure. I definitely had a moment where I was like, I don't even drink. Like, why are we spending money on alcohol for people?
Yeah.
But like, yeah. you know, ultimately, like, you're hosting a party and you want sure. your guests to have fun. Right. So that was, I think, like the only conversation we had was like, okay, like we're spending this much money on alcohol, but it wasn't ever really like a debate of like, are we going to have it or not? It was more just
yeah.
like, what will we have? Who, you know, what will the signature drinks be? Who, and also we had a fairly small wedding. It was 75 okay. guests. So it was really like looking at the guest list and being like, who drinks, who doesn't drink? Right. And sort of just like thinking through what we wanted the night to look like.
Yeah. And it's also like, I think a lot of people are concerned that like people will get messy or like, you know, get really wasted. It's a wedding, it's a celebration, right? Like, you know, mm-hmm. you obviously can't control other people and their drinking, and nor should you want to. Mm-hmm. Were you ever concerned about that?
I wasn't. I, okay. Adam is a little bit older. Yeah. I mean, not much older. He's 36, but like a lot of his friends were already married. Some had kids by the time we got married, were yeah. mostly out of their like crazy party phase that they had maybe been in like just out of college. Like, yeah. We had both been to a good amount of those like early weddings where you're like 24, 25, like the first people who get married. I think those were like crazy parties where people took advantage of the open bar.
Sure.
I think we both kind of felt like our friends were not necessarily like in that place. Yeah. I also am still very close with my very good friends from college, but a lot okay. of the people that I did a bit more like partying with in, you know, my 20s in New York, I've drifted from a little bit. So
right.
there aren't a lot of them, but like I said, it was a small wedding. We right. didn't really have anyone on the guest list that we were like, ooh, this person's crazy. And we're kind of worried that they're going to be like messy at the wedding.
Right.
And there were people who like certainly were drinking. I don't know. I really don't know if anyone was like that drunk. Like I said, I didn't really pay attention, but yeah. people were like on the dance floor, and that's what we wanted. You know, we wanted
yeah.
people to like have fun and dance and feel like they were celebrating.
Yeah, definitely. And then I want to talk about your partner and how your relationship has been, you know, and how sobriety has impacted your relationship.
Yeah.
What does that look like for you guys?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously he's a keeper. You married him.
He is a keeper. He is a yeah. keeper. Adam and I have been together. So we've been married a little over a year. We've been together. It'll be 4 years next month.
Okay.
And
how did you meet?
We were introduced through a mutual friend.
Nice. I love that.
Yeah, it was a very like happenstance. I was just talking to her about this recently. It was like a very happenstance interaction, like the way it all happened. She and I were chatting and just like offhandedly, I think he texted her while we were talking because they were working together. Okay. And she just sort of looked up from her phone and was like, I think you might like this guy. Like, I don't know. I just have a feeling. Yeah. And
interesting. Okay.
And we, yeah, so she connected us, and from the start, you know, we just connected. It was very easy. It was just like, everything's like so cliche. I feel like when I talk about this, like all the cliches are true, but like, I felt like I had known him
for a reason. Okay.
It is. Like, I just felt like I had known him for a really long time. It felt really natural. We like our banter was just like really good. And, I just liked him, you know. I remember honestly feeling like this is way too good to be true. Like, this is too easy. He's too nice. He like calls when he says he will, he follows up, he makes plans, like he plans these really sweet dates for us. We just like had a lot of fun. And
but you genuinely liked him as a person, like taking kind of like the love side apart, like you actually enjoyed him and respected him as a person, right?
I did. Yeah. Adam
is huge.
Anyone who knows him, I think, would agree that like, there's just really no one else like him. He's super smart, very funny, very honest.
Yeah.
Really just like says it like it is. Like, he's just a very genuine person. And I remember just feeling like I wanted to like experience life with him. Like, I wanted to travel with him. I wanted to like eat at restaurants with him. I wanted to talk to him about my day. I wanted to know what he thought about things. Like, I loved his brain. Like, he's a avid reader. He just like was super curious, and, you know, and about my sobriety, like, you know, that was one of the first things that we kind of went deep on, like in our early days of dating, and he had questions about it, but like he was just really accepting of it, and I just felt very safe sharing things with him, you know. And I had gone on my fair share of dates in sobriety before I met him. I'd been sober like about a year and a half, but had been like active on dating apps that whole time, and had gone on many dates and had sort of just like gone through a range of experiences with men having like different reactions to to my sobriety. And Adam just didn't, it just wasn't a thing, you know. He just and he made me feel like it was really cool, like it was an accomplishment. He was like, that's awesome, and really like celebrated it. I remember
Love that.
Yeah. Like, I remember on my like 2 year sober anniversary, like, which was, you know, a few months after we had been dating, he like made dinner plans for us and, you know, got me a card, and like, it was very sweet. He just saw it as this cool thing that I had accomplished and continued to do. And, you know, also I was very like, I was in a stage when I met him, I was in my like confident sober era, like, which I hadn't been in the first like year of my sobriety, like the first few months, especially. I had kept it a secret. I hid it from my friends. I felt like this was super embarrassing. And then I'd started writing about it a little bit before I met Adam. And that had really helped me to just like own it and feel like very, you know, accomplished, and like I'd set my mind to this thing that had been really hard in the beginning, and I just felt like this is awesome that I've been able to do this. I feel good, like I'm you know, I was like feeling myself. And I think that was also something that he picked up on and very much like mirrored back to me and was like, yeah, it is awesome, you know. And And I, so in that like vein, I had been really into my, like my daily practices and like the things that I needed to do to maintain my sobriety. And
yeah,
I was like, you know, journaling and meditating and exercising, and had found the sober community and was like connected to my friends there. And, you know, was just really making that a priority, going to therapy.
Yep.
And I was open with him about that, you know, when we first started dating, and he was just like, that's great. And I think he really respected that I had my own thing going on, and that like,
yes,
I was independent within the relationship and outside of the relationship. I knew what I needed to do to feel good and to like take care of myself. And I think in other relationships, I had always looked to the person for happiness, you know, to like fill that hole or whatever. Right. And it's like, I remember in college, like being in this super serious at the time, it felt super serious relationship. And like, if he was having a bad day, I was having a bad day. If he was in a good mood, I was in a good mood. Like, and with Adam, it was just like, we're two individual people who know what we need to do to take care of ourselves. And like, when we come together, it was just exciting and fun. So,
oh,
yeah,
that is the best. That is the recipe. That is the like cheat sheet for like a healthy relationship.
And I think the other, And I think the other thing is, I just never doubted how he felt about me. And I had just never had that before. Like, I'd always done the guessing game. Am I going to hear from this guy? Does he like me? He's playing games. I don't hear from him when he says he will. Like, and I just really believe that, like, if for anyone listening who's dating or, you know, looking for a relationship, like, it should be easy. Like, relationships are not always easy. Once you're living together, married, right? Like, there's life situations that you have to navigate, and there's compromise and communication and all of that, right? Like, that's not easy every single day, but the beginning stage and trying and, you know, just figuring out what this is going to be, like, that should be easy. I knew that he liked me, and I knew that I liked him, and I never had to question that. And like, that certainty created space for a lot of really fun experiences.
Oh, I love that. Okay. I have a kind of weird question.
Okay.
Cause I'm kind of like in this kind of like same position. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, there's like certainty. Like, this person likes me, I like them. But like, did you ever get weirded out by that? Or like turned off by that? Like, okay, this is not how it usually is. This is weird.
Yes, I absolutely did. I think that's really normal. And I don't think enough people talk about it. And like I mentioned earlier, because he was so nice and so just like different than other guys I had dated, I did have this feeling of like, this is too good to be true. Something's gonna go wrong. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. What's wrong with this guy? You know, because like, you date long enough, and like, especially in a big city, you have experiences. You get ghosted, you get lied to, you get disappointed, your feelings change, like you get the ick, like someone does something that's a turnoff, right? Like, I have all those experiences. And so I was just like waiting for something to happen. And I think that like, we just get comfortable with what we know. And that was what I knew, was like, just this sort of dating game. And I really had to like shift my perspective to be like, okay, that's what I had in the past, but like, this, like, look around, right? There, I have people in my life who are in healthy relationships. It exists. It's possible. Yeah. And it just takes one person. So like, I'm going to take it one day at a time. I'm going to pay attention to the information that I'm given. If I receive new information that tells me that something's not right, or, you know, makes my spidey senses like go off, okay, I can pay attention to it. But like, there was nothing in my gut that was telling me something's wrong here. It was just fear. I was just experiencing fear that like, I didn't deserve it, or that something was going to change. And so I just had to, you know, work on my thinking and just be like, okay, just for today, like, he has done nothing to suggest that he is, like, he has like a second hidden family or life right. somewhere else. Like, I don't know what my fear was or what I was thinking, but like,
yeah.
you know, I'm going to take him at face value and trust what he's saying and his actions are lining up. And,
yep.
and, you know, I think that's all we can really do in any situation is to just be like, okay, I'm going to just pay attention to the information that I'm given. And if something feels off, then I can, yeah. you know, react accordingly. But I do yeah. think it's normal to, when you have something that's easy, to just be like, wait, what do I do? Like,
yeah.
I'm used to it being hard. That's what totally. I've like gotten wired for.
But that's also like your relationship with alcohol, right? Like that's, this is why I think that people view or think that sobriety is going to be boring, because alcohol is like that kind of like fuck boy who is like, okay, are they going to text? Are they not going to text? Like this push and pull, this up and down, this like roller coaster of emotions. Right. And so it's, yes, to a certain degree, it's exciting because you don't know what's really going to happen. It's exciting. It's stressful. It's anxiety ridden. It's like all these things, but they aren't necessarily healthy. They aren't things that you can actually build a solid foundation on with another person or another thing, any kind of relationship, right? And I think that's why people get afraid in like relationships that are too like stable or too, yeah, like you can kind of like rely on them, which is also terrifying for someone who's used to being jerked around. So alcohol is the same thing.
It's the exact same thing. That's such a great comparison. And yes, I was very much in like a toxic relationship with alcohol where I was like going back and forth. What kind of a night are we going to have? Like, is it going to end in tears? Is it going to be fun? Like, but then going back for more because I kind of craved that chaos and that drama. And it's so true. It's the same with relationships. And, you know, it's like sobriety is never boring. It is the opposite to me. It's just like, you know, I can experience everything to like the utmost degree in a way that I couldn't when I was drinking.
Yeah.
However, I definitely did have that like discomfort that we're talking about with dating in early sobriety when things started to just get better for me. Like my life started to get better. I started to feel better. And I was like, whoa, this is weird. Like, where's the chaos? Where's the drama? No one's mad at me. I remember what I did last night. Like, I'm not injured. Like,
I'm responsible. What the hell's happening?
Like, I remember being like, this is weird. And I did feel a little bored, but then I was like, this isn't boring. This is good. This is
this is peace. It's called peace of mind. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think it's sort of just like asking yourself, getting honest with yourself and being like, why do you feel like you only thrive in when things are bad? You know, like, why is that my standard? Why am I uncomfortable when things are good, when I am in a healthy relationship, when I'm waking up and remembering what I did the night before? Why is my knee-jerk reaction that like, this is unusual?
Yeah. Or why is my knee-jerk reaction to kind of like self-sabotage that to a degree?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I did try to think self-sabotage the relationship in the beginning. I think just by thinking to myself, like, this is too good to be true. I'm sure that I like reflected that in some ways, you know, and it took me time to just fully surrender to it and like let myself be loved and be happy. Like, I definitely remember conversations in the beginning being like, this is like too good. Like, why are you being so nice to me? And I remember him being like, what do you mean? Like, he's like, I like you. Like,
oh my God.
You know,
it sounds like really weird, like saying it out loud, but it's totally like in your own head. It totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Like completely.
Like, I remember Adam like introducing me to his friends.
Yeah.
And I was like, why are you doing this? Like, we just started dating. He's like, I like you. Like, I want you to meet my friends, you know, just like not that complicated, but we, the like urge to self-sabotage is so real.
Yeah, it's like, what, you like me? Oh my God, you're actually going to admit that and like introduce me to people in your life that you, that matter to you? What the hell is happening?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. Okay, well, it works out. You can be happy, right?
You can be happy.
Yeah, you really deserve to be happy.
Yes, you deserve to be happy.
Yeah.
And don't let your brain tell you otherwise.
Yeah. Don't let that like inner wine witch convince you that you don't deserve to be happy. Sarah, talk to me about Drinking Games.
Okay, so Drinking Games is my memoir. It is available now. It came out on January 3rd, 2023. Okay. And it tells the story of my relationship with alcohol and also talks about, more significantly, all the ways in which my life changed when I got sober. When I was struggling with my drinking, I did a lot of reading and read a lot of, like, basically read everything I could get my hands on, and in like the alcohol addiction space. And what I found were like a lot of like really beautiful books about hitting rock bottom and kind of like the messy, painful process of struggling with alcohol. Some of the books I saw myself in, some I didn't. But what I really couldn't find was a book about like what happened after getting sober. You know, I was most concerned about that. And I wanted a book, you know, written by someone that I could relate to, someone who I could see myself in, someone who was single and working and living in a city and, you know, who didn't necessarily like check out of their life and go to rehab for 6 months, like someone who was still going to be experiencing relationships and friendships and situations, but with alcohol removed. And I really couldn't find that book. I certainly did not get sober with the intention of writing it because, like I said, I was very embarrassed about being sober for the first year. But I had always loved writing. I journaled a lot in early sobriety. And when I had a little over a year sober, I started thinking like maybe people would want to read about this the same way that I did, you know, when I was struggling.
Yeah.
And that was sort of how the idea originated for the book. And it's, there's also a lot of elements of social critique in the book. So I talk about different aspects of millennial culture and the ways in which my drinking and then sobriety impacted those areas, everything from dating, wellness, social media, beauty, my career, family, just different topics that, you know, I spent a lot of time thinking about and like existing in those worlds, both when I was drinking and then when I got sober.
Wow. That's so interesting. And what, how did the title come to be? Tell me about, how you came up with the title.
That's a really good question. I honestly don't remember. I think I was just playing around with different words. I think at one point the book was going to be called Thirsty.
Okay.
And then, I think Adam actually may have helped me come up with the title. I feel like we were just like going back and forth and coming up with like different words about like drinking and alcohol. And I loved Drinking Games because it felt, it was very like reminiscent of the early relationship that I had with alcohol, where it was very fun and like innocent and playful. And then ultimately, like I felt like I was playing Russian roulette every time I drank, like the game, the stakes got higher with my alcohol consumption. And so I felt like it had kind of like a dual meaning there.
Oh, I love that. I can definitely relate to the drinking roulette. Oof.
But I like that question. No one's asked me about the title yet, actually. And and I love the title. I can't even remember like the exact moment I came up with it.
Yeah, I love it. I like the title too. I'm like, I was wondering. I'm like, ooh. Because Drinking Games to me definitely is like, there's like a game kind of like inside my head. And it's like, okay, what player am I going to be when I drink? Right? Mm-hmm. Am I going to be like player one, who's like Hulk Hogan, who's literally throwing chairs at security guards? Is it player two, who's like crawled up in a like bottle service booth, like crying because like her ex was there or someone said something about her ex, like just ridiculous crybaby?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or was it like player three who's like swinging from the chandelier, like being like the ultimate party girl pouring vodka in people's mouths?
Yes, right. Like you never know what you're going to get, right?
Yeah.
And that, yeah, that was like we're talking about with the volatility of drinking and having it be like a toxic relationship.
Yeah.
That was the same for me. Like it was, that was the game. I never knew what was going to happen once I started to drink. I never knew how my night was going to end. So I feel like the title captures all of that.
Love it.
Thank you.
Love it. Sarah, I have one more question for you. For anyone listening to us right now who is maybe thinking of getting sober or like going through it, what advice could you give to them?
You know, I can only speak from personal experience, but to me, sobriety really seemed like the end of my life. I really did not want to get sober. I was so afraid. And what I would say to my younger self, so I guess I could give the same advice to someone listening, is that truly giving up this one thing that's not serving you will give you so much more in return, you know? And to just give yourself a chance to see if it makes your life better and to see, you know, how you feel without it. If you want to drink again, right? Like,
Alcohol's really, not like, going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere. Like take it one day at a time.
And just
see how your life unfolds without it. But I, you know, felt like my life would be over when I stopped drinking, and it was really just beginning. And I write that in my book as well, because it's just like so powerful when I think about how long I tried to keep drinking because I was really afraid and I thought I needed to. And then like this crazy transformation that I experienced when I stopped. So, you know, if you're listening and you're considering sobriety, you're allowed to stop drinking. You can.
Yeah.
Today can be your day one. You can always start fresh, you know, and you don't have to think about never drinking again. That's too overwhelming. Just, you know, I'd say take it one day at a time. Reach out to people who you know are sober or sober, you know, curious, and talk to people. For me, like hearing my experiences mirrored back to me and someone else was super powerful, especially in the beginning.
Yeah.
And just like know that you're not alone, because I felt really alone in it. And that I think made it really scary as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you're totally right. Like, you know, you could be the only person in your friend group, in your relationship, amongst your peers. And you could feel like, okay, this is the end of the world. I'm the alien, right? I'm the outcast here. But that's really not, it's not true. You may be the only person within your social group, but there's so many, there's hundreds of thousands, millions of people out there who are not only like feel and think the same, but are going through the exact same thing you are.
Totally. And there's so many people, so many creative people, so many, you know, people in the entertainment industry, so many like successful entrepreneurs, authors, athletes, just people that you would never imagine who are sober. Mm-hmm. I really think that it's just like this cool secret society that we're a part of. And I didn't know that when I was drinking. I thought that like everyone who was cool drank, and being sober meant you were, you know, a loser. And that's not the case either. So, you know, I would say like, remind yourself of that if you're considering getting sober. Like there are a ton of really cool and interesting people who don't drink.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Like it's actually shocking when you, I mean, people who don't drink don't necessarily talk about it. Like, especially like really high powered, successful people. It's just not even in their like vibration. It's not even on their level.
Yeah.
It's not a thing. But like anyone that I talk to, you know, who, especially in business and like finance, and where you have to be really dialed in, they're like, I could never have the success I have if I was drinking. It's just, it's unnecessary. It's like it totally weighs you down. Part of my productivity. Bye.
Right. It's so true. And like, we're fed this image in movies and TV shows, you know, of like the high powered main character comes home from a long day, killing it in the office, and has a big glass of wine. And like, we just think that that's what we're supposed to do. And, you know, it's just, that's just not the case for everyone who is successful and happy. So
yeah, I mean, that's also like shit on TV.
Totally.
Like, right? Like Wolf of Wall Street, like get out of here.
Right.
Like who's that? Like, that's only fun for people watching.
Totally. Or even like, I remember watching Scandal and seeing like Olivia Pope, like, you know, with her perfect outfits and her perfect apartment and like having her wine and being like, oh, like I want to be like that. And then it's like, wait, huh? Like Olivia Pope's like having an affair with the president of the United States, like her dad, like what do you, like that's not your real life. Like I'm comparing one small portion of that show to my day to day and being like,
yeah,
she has wine every night, so I need to. It's like, you're not Olivia Pope. Like this is a TV show.
Yes, totally. Oh my God. I love that. I love it. Sarah, where can we find you and where can we find your book?
You can find me on Instagram at Sarah L. Levy or on my website, sarahllevy.com. And my book is available for purchase wherever books are sold. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, at your local bookstore. And I also recorded the audiobook. So if that's more your speed, you can download the audiobook as well.
Oh, awesome. Love that. I'm a huge Audible girl for sure.
Yeah.
Sarah, thank you so, so much for being here again and sharing your experience and knowledge and wisdom with us. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jess. It was so fun catching up. And thank you again for having me on.
I am so happy for Sarah and her, all of her success, her life success, her professional success. She is such an amazing woman. Sarah has also been so graceful to give us a free signed copy of her new book. If you would like to win this free signed copy from the author for Drinking Games, you must become a member of the Sober Girl Social Club. In there, you will find our link to our Sober Girl book club. If you go into our private members only chat and comment on the posting about Sarah's book giveaway, you'll be entered to win a signed copy. As always, thank you so much for listening. Please make sure to rate, subscribe. We love to hear feedback about the podcast. Please make sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at A Sober Girl's Guide and head over to asobergirlsguide.com. We have everything you need at any stage of your booze-free journey. From challenges to workbooks to a social Sober Girl Social Club, we got your back at any stage of your booze-free journey. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.